Hi, this is Paul, and this is Rough Draft for Sunday, where I run through the current status of my sermon this week. And this week, the sermon's going to be entitled Jesus versus the Zombies. I want to begin by reading a passage from the Old Testament. The priest is to examine him, and if the swollen sore on his skin, on his head or forehead, is reddish white, like a defiling skin disease, the man is diseased and is unclean. The priest shall pronounce him unclean because of the sore on his head. If anyone with such a defiling skin disease, must wear torn clothes, let their hair be unkempt, cover the lower part of their face and cry out, unclean, unclean. As long as they have the disease, they must remain unclean. They must live alone. They must live outside the camp. Now, what's amazing here is when I hear this, I think about zombies. And the reason I think about zombies is the strange thing that, okay, they've got a defiling skin disease. Okay, if you want to somehow project this onto a modern therapeutic imagination, you would say, oh, they're just trying to avoid plague or something like that. No, I don't think so. The clean, unclean, I preached about this a number of years ago. The clean, unclean dynamic in the Old Testament is symbolic of a bigger world that God was introducing the Hebrews into. Now it's amazing here that the point isn't that, okay, so you've got this disease, so put a little makeup on it, at least wear some nice clothes, and at least, you know, make the best of your situation even with the skin disease. No! You must wear torn clothes and keep your hair unkempt and cover the lower part of your face and cry out, unclean, unclean, and live alone outside the camp. What are these zombies supposed to represent for the rest of the nation? Are they in some ways sacrificial victims for the whole community to understand something deep about what, in this whole symbolic world that is set up with the clean and unclean and the camp at the center and all of those things that are in the book of Leviticus, are they to communicate something about shalom and the way life is supposed to be by virtue of their outcast status, of their torn clothes? Are they walking, in fact, in a gray world? Now, I love this quote from Aldous Huxley that I got from this top book, Zombies in Western Culture. Zombies have grown in popularity and been a fascination for a lot of scholars trying to get a handle on what's with our culture now, especially after the Cold War. This was from Huxley, written in the 60s. Both of us are victims of the 20th century plague, not the Black Death, but the gray life. And below, Robert Jalstra and Alyssa Wilkinson wrote How to Survive the Zombie Apocalypse. That's a Christian book. But the top one, Verveke, who's another scholar coming out of University of Toronto, writing about how zombies, in a sense, typify the crisis of meaning that our current world in the West is taken by. We're living in the gray world. There is no meaning. And so, well, what world do we live in? And if you go through history and look at just the biggest chunks of things, in the ancient world, the world was imagined to be the playground of the gods, and we are their slaves or their toys. In the modern period, in providential deism, God made this world for my comfort, pleasure, and happiness. Now in postmodern world, Big Bang physics plays itself out in the determinist script. The self is buffered. There is no God. Meaning is an illusion. You eat, you want, you grab all you can, and you die. And that has created for us the gray world, a world in which we look at our screens. We don't connect with each other. We become zombies. We're all infected. We don't talk, we don't touch, we just consume and consume. We consume brains and are never satisfied. Now, last week, at the beginning of the the middle part of Mark chapter 1, we saw Jesus wreaking havoc on the unclean spirits, where Jesus comes down and wages war against that which is unclean, not to destroy the people bound by it, but to destroy the uncleanliness of it. And this drew to Jesus everyone who was wanting in the city of Capernaum. The whole city gathered around the door, and he cured many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons, and he would not permit the demons to speak because they knew who he was. And now it's interesting that, again, let's see if I, did I do this slide? I had a slide in mind that I didn't do. There it is. I should move that slide. See, you get the rough draft here. Hang on. Jesus casts out the unclean spirit by speaking and keeping the unclean demons from speaking. So there's something going there in terms of the speaking. Jesus casts out the fever disease by touching. And remember, touch is very important when it comes to clean and unclean in the Levitical system. Jesus casts out the unclean disease transmitted by touch by touching. The symbolic world continues. And getting up early in the morning while it was still very dark. And you remember last time, darkness settled on the town and everyone came to Jesus, kind of like in a zombie movie when all the zombies are drawn. And Jesus comes and Jesus heals those who come and releases them from demons. And you get the sense that he exhausts and he cleans out the town in the night, but then he wakes up very early in the morning and he departed and goes to, now our English translations again fail us because the word here is again wilderness that we've been tracking throughout Mark chapter 1. But then Mark adds this place word at the end of it. And even Matthew and Luke didn't quite know what to do with that. But this then gets repeated. And this comes up now here in Mark chapter 1. In Mark chapter 6, when Jesus retreats to the deserted place and the mobs find him in the desert and he feeds them by dividing loaves and fishes. And then also later in the book, he prays in the garden in the deserted place. In the solitary place, Jesus goes and there you have all of this symbolism coming in. He's in the wilderness where there can be no life. And he, like Israel, God gives him life there in the wilderness. And he's doing so in prayer. Prayer is the avenue by which God brings him life. Simon and those who were with him searched diligently for him. And they found him and they said to him, "Everyone is looking for you." It's as if, this is what's important, Jesus. We have a very clear idea how our agenda in this world works. We work through popularity and fame, and we marshal all kinds of people. And in that context, in their imaginations, they're thinking, we take town by town until finally we can take the big cities, and then we can kick out the Romans, and then who knows? Look what Alexander the Great did. And so they look for Jesus, and where are you? Everyone's looking for you. You're famous. You're celebrated. You're our man. And yeah, but the crowd owns you. The mob owns you. And Jesus won't be owned by the mob. And he said to them, "Let us go elsewhere." What? You were such a big hit in Capernaum. No, let us go elsewhere. And he said, "Into the neighboring rural towns so that I can preach there also. Because I have come out for this very reason." So he went in all Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and expelling demons. This is Jesus at the beginning of the Gospel of Mark. And Jesus is taking on the unclean spirits wherever they are and chasing them out. But you think, well, is this the manner of his mission? Is this what he's going to do? He's going to chase out the unclean spirits. He's going to make Israel whole and pure again. And now this would have bounced off the the first century Jewish culture war in a certain way, because the Pharisees would have thought, okay, purification, but purification is an avenue to political success. And Jesus is purifying, but he's not playing politics. Why? What's wrong with you, Jesus? What exactly is your mission? But Mark and Jesus in Mark has a very interesting take on the mobs, on the crowds. They're zombies. Actually, the other Gospels pick this up too. They are hungry, but never satisfied. Do a miracle for us. Cast out a demon. Feed us. Do what meet our needs. They clamor for relief, but they don't want to look in the mirror at the sources of their malady. Heal me today, Jesus, so I can get sick and be healed by you again tomorrow. What does it mean to be clean? What does it mean to be consecrated? What does it mean to become holy? They mindlessly chase and consume brains, ideas, content. But they never find rest. Why does God leave the maladies? C.S. Lewis ponders, pain is God's megaphone for a deaf world. They're drawn to Jesus, but they're drawn to Jesus in a certain way, sort of like the zombie horde. They want to feed from him, but not in a way that would satisfy. In a sense, the bread of life is before them, but they don't have sense to understand what it is. And so Jesus gives out samples. Will they hear? Will they taste? Will they partake? Now that they are clean, will they repent? Remember how this got started with John the Baptist making the way straight. And a leper came to him, entreating him, kneeling down. So now we have prayer again, saying to him, if you are willing, you are able to make me clean. He's expressing faith. Jesus has the power, but is he willing? And he became angry. This is Jesus. And now there's a lot of controversy about that word because there's a textual issue there. This is the harder reading, and so it tends to stick. He became angry. Well, angry at what? Indignant at the way the world is, angry at the crowd. They see his anger, and maybe they don't know. Anger at the uncleanness that is abroad in the world that has captured the people, or angry at the people because they've simply become a zombie mob. He stretched out his hand and touched him. He touches the leper. And again, in the Levitical system, that would have made Jesus unclean. But no, that's not how Jesus is. Jesus makes clean what he touches. Whereas with us, we become unclean by uncleanliness touching us. And he said to him, I am willing, be made clean. He both speaks to him and touches him. And immediately the leprosy went away from him. Now what's interesting is that language is very similar to earlier in the chapter when he cries, when Jesus commands the unclean spirit to leave the man and it goes out of him. There's all this going out. It's as if the man is possessed by the illness, and now it leaves him. Now, what's interesting is that probably in their imagination, just like the scapegoat from the old covenant, would probably go out into the wilderness. That's where the spirits go, out to the place. But who was just out in the wilderness? And what was he doing there? Who is this Jesus? And warning him sternly, he sent him away at once. And he said to him, see to it that you say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and bring for your cleansing the things which Moses commanded. These were his ceremonial duties. For a testimony to them. But he went out and began to proclaim it freely and spread abroad the account so that he was no longer able to publicly enter into town. But he was staying outside in deserted places, and they were coming to him from all directions. So Jesus himself goes back out into the wilderness. The voice of one crying in the wilderness. Is it John? Is it Jesus? So they go out into the desert place, the people looking for Jesus, because they are even willing to go out into the chaos. Now remember, he picked fishermen, men that go out into the watery chaos and pull life. Now the people are acting like fishermen. They're going out into the desert chaos, looking for life, looking for cleanness. They are going back out into wilderness boot camp, echoing the Old Testament Israel coming out of watery Egypt into waterless desert, looking to Jesus for life. The wilderness, the place he prayed. Now we are the zombie mob. We thrash about looking for things to consume that will not satisfy us. We are unclean, spreading out contamination and infection. We push God out into the wild because we try to capture him and make him our subject. But the wilderness is not under our domain. It is not cultivated territory. It is not colonized by humanity. But so desperate are we that we may follow him out there. One comes with power to make clean. This is different from everyone else. We infect by touching and speaking. He cleanses by touching and speaking, and he is willing. His Galilean ministry is to proclaim, but it is not consummated in Galilee. He must go to Jerusalem, the holy city, where lepers are not able to enter. There in Jerusalem, he will offer himself to the zombie horde. Jerusalem, that is supposedly kept clean by the exclusion of leopards, is in fact a home of the zombie horde who have been feeding on religious brain. They will flay his flesh. They will consume him in the manner that they consume all. But he will not be consumed. He will consummate. He will rise. This quote made me think of Herschel, and if you're a Walking Dead fan, you remember good old Herschel, the Christian man with the farm, Maggie's father. And Herschel once in one episode postulates how, "I was expecting a resurrection from the dead. These zombies were not what I was looking for." And Verveke's book, he says, "The zombie is a versatile enough symbol to stand for many kinds of human defilement. The symbol ultimately draws its aptness from being a perversion of the Christian mythos of death and resurrection." And in many ways, what we're seeing, I'm going to redo a slide, hang on. This is the false resurrection that we live in the middle of, the gray world, the infection, not the black death, but the gray world, the false resurrection feeding off the brains of others through our little screens, not talking, not touching, not able to taste. To be a Christian is having been touched by the Master and infected with the true resurrection. We zombies begin to heal from the inside out. Zombie decay halts, and healing starts. It will come full-blown in our final resurrection, the mindless mob becoming a loving army. Will you beseech him on your knees like a leper? Do you desire to be clean? Will you touch the leper like he does? Will you touch the lost in the mob? Will you pour your life out in love, so that it can be given back to you?